This podcast is a production of Bread on the Water Media and RadioForThePeople.com and is engineered by Audio Diner Studios. Our theme music is provided to us by our dear friend Gordon Bonham, whose music can be purchased through GordonBonham.com. Our graphics for this podcast are provided by Kathy Piercy Fryan. The podcast is sponsored by Artisan Realtors and Silicon Prairie Ventures.
This podcast is intended to give people a glimpse at what it's like to get a bad diagnosis, whether it's cancer or something else, and then go through a traumatic experience. First, we will discuss how my cancer story affected me and my family. Then we will talk about how their experiences affect other patients and their families, including discussions around why you need to advocate for yourself or for your family member. As we explore other patients' experiences, we will talk to some professionals about how to move forward after a traumatic or not medical event. I expect this to be a discussion that changes over time to reflect these combined experiences that I and others have had, and what our journeys are like, and the inevitable twists and turns that go along with real-world experiences. Join us on this ride as we attempt to show joy and laughter as well as the tragedy.
Welcome back to Normal, What's That Like? We're going to continue in this episode with our discussion with our host, Dan Adams, and his story of a cancer diagnosis.
So, but I do get, ultimately, I get released, I go home. It was kind of fun. I get home and there's people standing in my yard cheering. And I'm taking every ounce of energy I have to get my walker from the side door to the front of the house. Fortunately, I have a 95-year-old mother-in-law. And so we have a ramp in the front door. So I don't have to try to get up and down the steps. And I get inside and a great relief, but I'm home. Yeah. And from there, you know, we have this feeding tube. We're going to do physical therapy and occupational therapy. And that was, and I'm going to say this in a polite and nice way, but it was kind of a joke, because what the insurance will pay for physical therapy and occupational therapy is not much. So I think I saw one of them four times. The other one I saw twice or three times. And as soon as I was able to basically go to the bathroom by myself and they felt like I could navigate stairs somewhat successfully, mm-hmm. although they never had me do it, they just thought that I was capable.
Really?
Yeah. They said they were done and that's all insurance would pay for.
So it really had nothing to do with whether you could walk up and down the steps. It had to do with the fact the insurance
They had to meet certain guidelines, and they met the certain guideline. But the scariest part was when the physical therapist first came out, he said, okay, the first test we're going to do is I'm going to give you two fingers, and I want you to squeeze them as hard as you can. And he said, okay, you can start.
And you said, I'm already doing it?
I'm squeezing as hard as I can. So what I didn't realize was my muscles had atrophied to the point that, you know, well, this drastic weight loss, you know, my body was eating itself. And so I was so weak that I couldn't hardly do anything. But the good news was something about being at home, I gained strength really fast. The second day home, I took a shower on my own. George Ann helped me with a shower the first day, but the second day I was already feeling strong enough to take. I mean, we had grab bars in the shower. They made me get grab bars and do all that fun stuff. But I was able to take a shower by myself. But that was also the same day that I saw my reflection in the mirror the first time. And I could not believe, again, I talked earlier about the Holocaust survivors, and I don't use that term lightly because that's a really sad history we went through. But I looked like those pictures. I mean, I was literally, you could see my bones, my elbows, joints. You could see my shoulder. I mean, it was very, I was appalled. I couldn't believe it. But 3 days later, I actually went to see this new oncologist that I was referred to. And this, we'll call her Dr. A. Dr. A was the most positive person I had ever met. I mean, from a medical standpoint, I went in the room, she lit up the room with her smile. She told me that not only did she think she could help me, she thought she might be able to cure me. She asked me what difficulties I was having, and I told her about my allergies and the tube in my nose. She said, we'll get rid of it. She called the nurse in, they took the tube out, that on the spot. She just exuded all this energy, which is really what I needed. I needed somebody to feel positive about what was going on. And the girls were impressed. Georgianne was impressed. Two of the girls went with us to that appointment.
And the good news is, I mean, doctors in general tend to be, I mean, they have to be a little less than you don't want to be too positive. If anything, they want to be, you know, realistic. For her to be coming in that positive, you got to feel there's some weight behind what she's saying.
Yeah, I do. And she's been continued to be, in my opinion, amazing. Now, if there's a downside, she doesn't like to talk prognosis at all. In fact, basically won't, because she feels like no matter what comes at her, she can battle it. Which is the kind of doctor you want.
Yeah, absolutely.
It makes it difficult for me to make some decisions about life, but I get it, and I wouldn't want it any other way.
Yeah.
So kind of where things have gone from there, I'm not going to spend much time about that, but I had five more treatments, and they did give the full treatment. In treatment two, I got Dr. Rubison, but they put it in a smaller... I didn't get like 20% less than the full dose, but on my second treatment. But then from then on, I got the full dose every time, and I was responding well. Actually, after my third treatment, the one in the hospital, but the second one after I'd been home, I actually felt good enough to go to lunch at Giacomo's Pizza and see some of my old friends, and I surprised everybody by showing up that day, I think.
Yeah, you certainly did.
But I began to feel normal. And it's a really strange word, but I've talked to some other people who've been through either cancer or some similar thing, and it's one thing you kind of crave. You've been in this hospital, or I wasn't allowed to see my grandchildren. I talked about them, you know, 1 and 2 year olds having runny noses. Well, because those kids go to daycare and they are exposed to all kinds of things, the doctors would not allow me to even see them until I got home. And even then, you know, I was supposed to have a mask on because they, at 1 and a half, they're not going to be wearing masks.
Right.
But I did get to hold them in my lap, and I had my mask on, and that was pretty exciting. So that was another normal for me. Going to Giacomo's was a normal for me. I began to feel good. I did have one more instance of a pretty bad panic attack. We went out to eat with some my son-in-law's family, and
did
it was
anything
just too much.
Oh, it was no specific thing that was said or done that suddenly gave the panic attack. It was just the...
Too much stimulus.
Too much stimulus.
But I had been given some medicine for that, and I took some. I didn't like taking it, but I did take some of it for a while. And I'm glad to say that that was the last panic attack I've had, and that was back in late April. So I proceed to June 27th. It's my sixth and final treatment, at least at that point. They had had me get a PET scan that morning, and then she was going to see me at 1, and she hoped to have the results of the PET scan. Turns out they did have them, but I had my blood work as normal. This was before the actual treatment. I still had one treatment to go. I saw her, and she showed me the PET scan, which I had never seen from February. showing my liver, my entire liver lit up like a light. It looked like a light bulb. And then the PET scan from that day, and my liver was just pink. No lights. And so doctors don't use the term remission anymore. I use it personally because it's something people understand.
Right.
They call it a complete treatment, which means the treatment did what it was designed to do. They don't like the term remission, I think, because that means that maybe something follows that isn't good. So they use the term that you had a complete treatment. And so that's how it was described to me at that point, was a complete treatment. I would have another PET scan again in 30 days just to double check.
Is there any kind of ongoing treatment that you have on the small chance that there's remaining cells in there wanting to spring to life? Are they doing anything
with
that?
So the only thing I'm currently taking at this point is I take an antiviral pill every day, which has been really cool in some ways in that I haven't had a cold or I haven't caught any of the sniffles the kids have had. I mean, I'm literally taking an antiviral pill every day. And the reason for that is one of the things that potentially sets off your immune system, which sets off lymphoma, is a virus.
So you're initially...
They don't know that, but that's there's enough...
But you had just, when we started this episode, you mentioned that, you know, the week or two before you had had norovirus.
Yeah, but they don't think that there's any way I could have been as sick as I was at that point for that to have been the kickoff.
The trigger? So they think you were already starting to have symptoms?
Well, in fact, I was explaining to my doc, my new oncologist, that I felt like I was so in such good shape in December, you know, that my heart rate was down in the 50s and, you know, I'm working out 3 times a week. And she goes, "Your heart rate was what? How old are you?" And I said, "It was in the 50s. She goes, "That was the cancer."
Really?
Yeah. She said the cancer had started to hit me already. And that's why my heart rate was that low. No matter what good of shape, what kind of shape I was in, without some chemical help, my heart rate shouldn't be at 63 or 64 at that point. My heart rate shouldn't be as low as it was, even in the 50s. Even if I was in, you know, running marathons.
Right.
So, so that was interesting. But so I've gone from there. I had my 30-day treatment. You know, so this whole normal thing. One of the other things that I really wanted to do, we own a lake house. And one of the things that was verboten from the first oncologist even, and through her, the second, Dr. A, was you can't get in lake water because lake water has all kinds of bacteria and viruses and things that float in it. And
forget the brain-eating amoebas.
Yeah, no getting in the lake. And I said, "When can I get in the lake?" She said, 30 days after your last treatment. So literally 30 days after the last treatment, I have an appointment with her. And Georgianne goes, "Are you going to ask her again to make sure?" And I said, "No, because she'll change her mind."
I am going in the water today.
I didn't go in that day, but I went in the next day.
Okay.
But you know, it really does change things. The other thing I got to do that day, June 27th, that I was, and a lot of people saw the video, I got to ring the bell. And, because of the journey I had gone through, you know, some people say that it's kind of anticlimactic, but I had been to a point where there potentially, and I didn't mention this earlier, one of the things that happened around St. Patrick's Day was I was very, very ill. One of the doctors suggested, and I don't remember which group they were from, I know it wasn't one of the oncologists, but suggested to Georgianne that she might want to sign a do not resuscitate document for me because they were that concerned about me. And I also had a premonition around the 18th or 19th of March that I was going to die. And I mean, I felt like I was going to die. And I don't know, I didn't, you know, it wasn't one of those where I felt myself floating above or wasn't any, you know, weird. I just had this feeling that I was that close to dying. And so I've come a long way from it to even be thinking about jumping in the water at that point.
Right. Well, it does seem like maybe they could have shipped in the Liberty Bell or something when it got time. But after the journey you've described here right now, it's a small bell just doesn't seem to express the the gratitude you probably had at that point that you were going home.
I had a smile on my face. Just talking about it, I've got another big smile on my face. But I had a smile on my face that stayed for quite a while, I think. But a good friend of mine happened to be in town from Virginia, and he and I went to the lake house together, and I got on a floaty and mixed myself a cocktail and got in the lake and had a great time, and it was all good.
I think there's amongst some of us, there's belief that a good bourbon helps prevent returns of lymphoma.
And my liver doctor probably doesn't want to hear that. But I think it can't hurt.
Right.
So post-treatment, the two really cool things happened to me. I got to talk to my primary care doc, and he said, first of all, the very first thing he said to me, he didn't say we made a mistake, and I don't expect him to say that, but he did say, you told us in the beginning that it wasn't the norovirus and we weren't listening. It teaches me a lesson that I need to listen sometimes better than I do, because he said, you knew something was going on.
I think he did admit that they were wrong in a very strong way. I think that's actually a better way of saying it than saying we made a mistake. They said, you had this and we learned from it. That's a good thing.
So he also told me that he gave me some information that my doctor hadn't given me. He said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to get stronger for a couple of reasons. One, I think if I hadn't been as strong as I was, chances are I might not have survived. The second part of that being I feel better when I'm working out and doing things. And I wasn't allowed. The chemotherapy is so hard on your heart, and I was at such a weakened state. They absolutely told me I could not work out, no lifting weights, no doing anything, because they didn't want that extra stress on my heart beyond what the chemo was already putting on my heart. So I was also released to exercise again. And so he suggested I find a doctor who's special, or a physical therapist, a trainer, somebody who specialized in working with cancer patients. And so I got online and tried to find somebody like that. And I found there's an organization that's not around anymore. And so I'm not going to mention its name because it doesn't exist anymore. But I found this information about this doctor who had a clinic where she was kind of meeting with cancer patients and helping them work through things, not therapy, because she's an oncologist, not a therapist, but there was also an exercise component to it. So I emailed them like immediately, and I never heard back from anybody. So then I called and left a message, and I never heard back from anybody. And then I called again, and I finally did hear back. Well, the reason I didn't hear back is because this entity had gone away. It was started during COVID, and the timing wasn't, you know, people couldn't go face-to-face. They couldn't go to a trainer. They couldn't go meet with a person and talk because they couldn't. So she said, I'd love to start meeting with you. And she gave me a referral, oddly, to something called the MOVE program, which is at IU Simon Cancer Center, which my doctor knew nothing about, my oncologist. But it's a program where you get a personal trainer for all infection purposes. In fact, not only is it a personal trainer, they're a PhD in exercise physiology who works with you for an hour a day, 3 days a week, So I'm in essence, I have a personal trainer who has a PhD, and I go 3 days a week, and it's 36 sessions. I completed the 24th session yesterday.
So is that covered by insurance? Or?
It's absolutely free. It's covered by the IU Health Foundation. There's no cost. In fact, the parking is even paid for. I don't pay for parking.
That's better when I serve on a jury.
Yeah, there you go. Well, they pay you.
Okay. If you want to call it that.
So this MOVE program at Simon Cancer Center has been phenomenal. I'm gaining strength and endurance. And it's
exclusively for recovering cancer patients.
It is exclusively for recovering cancer patients. It was started for breast cancer, because if you know anything about fundraising and cancer, breast cancer has huge funding for it because it's such a big thing that people talk about. Lymphoma, oddly enough, is the second largest fundraiser, gets a lot of money too, but it doesn't come close to what happens for breast cancer. And so they started this for breast cancer patients, and then they opened it up just actually last January. So if I'd gone through this a year earlier, this program wouldn't have existed for me.
Are there any other requirements for someone to get into this program?
Well, you do have to take a modified treadmill test and make sure you're
physically capable of
taking it. But no, other than that you're a cancer patient who's had some form of debilitation.
Yeah. No. Wow.
So I'm 24.
Maybe a future episode should be to talk with someone from that program.
I might already have permission to do that.
Good. I think that would be an excellent thing to share with folks.
And also talking to this other doctor, and she's probably going to be a future guest on this podcast as well, has been tremendous for me. In my whole life, I never thought talking to a therapist or anything like a therapist was really something that I would be interested in. And she's not a therapist because that's her degree. She's an oncologist. So she's not using her medical degree. So she's a life coach is what she is for me, for all intents and purposes. But I will tell you what, I just finished my 8th session with her last week, and it's been phenomenally helpful. And
tomato, right?
Yeah,
I mean, whatever you call her, it's the result.
But yeah, she's been phenomenal, and she's also a future guest for us.
Good.
So what else is going on? I've been to the UP and went on a camping trip and couldn't go backpacking because I wasn't quite ready for that.
But I understand the rest of the folks on that trip were glad you couldn't, because that gave them an excuse not to have to backpack.
And also somebody else got hit by a car on their bicycle and wasn't able to backpack. So it turned out to be pretty interesting. I also have a brand new grandson who's 4 weeks old as of yesterday. And his middle name is Daniel. I don't know if it has anything to do with the fact that I was sick or not, but I'll take it however that goes.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So what happens from here forward? You asked about, I get once a quarter, I have to get blood work done. Every 6 months, I have a scan done.
Has your oncologist talked to you about on the chance that, because she doesn't talk possibly, does she have a plan for if it returns?
Yes.
What the next?
She would talk about that. She said there's lots of therapies.
Right.
A lot of times lymphoma is a blood cancer. So lymphoma relates more closely to leukemia than most other forms of cancer. It's blood cancer. It's spread through your blood, and it originates in your bone marrow. So obviously the next step, if I don't respond to some kind of therapy, probably is bone marrow transplant, which is not a exciting or fun process, but it works for some people pretty well. And then there's all these, there's new therapies called CAR T, which we're familiar with from a friend of ours who didn't fare well with the CAR T therapy and ultimately didn't survive. But there are some other therapies out there. And
your doctor, this is based on conversations you and I have had off
off air that she is highly familiar with these new, the CAR T stuff and all these new therapies, right?
Yeah, she is. She's cutting edge. She does lots of research. She's cutting edge. In fact, we went to the Leukemia Lymphoma Society, has a walk every year called Light the Night. And to my surprise, the last person who spoke was a leukemia patient who was telling her story that she had been diagnosed with leukemia, was also pregnant. And the doctors were like, until the baby comes, we're hands off. But the leukemia was getting worse and worse and worse. And she said she finally found a doctor who would treat her. And it's my doctor.
Your doctor. Well, it's the Light the Night thing. They could have used your first scan of your liver with the way you were describing it. Oh.
Yeah. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about where I am today, and that'll be the end of it. So I got down below 160, went from 260 to below 160 in 3 weeks. I now weigh 193 pounds, 10 pounds less than probably when I got sick, but I'm very happy with where I am. Working out 3 times a week. I'm working, back to work, doing all that fun. How long that's going to go, I don't know. So what did this teach me? Did I learn anything from this? And somebody says, well, why would you care about that? Well, that's just the way I am. I mean, some people, what I've also learned, as I said from the beginning, some people don't like to talk about this kind of stuff. It doesn't bother me to talk about it. So I feel like maybe I can help people by talking about my experience. Maybe it'll help somebody else. And the first thing I learned is normal things are amazing. Just to go to my living room and have my grandchildren sit on my lap, or to go to lunch and have pizza with my buddies, or to go to the lake and get in the lake. It's amazing what a big deal that is. I used to, I said at the beginning that I wanted to travel the world. I still want to travel, but the idea of some huge trip, it's not even, it's appealing, but it's not a big deal to me. Every day is something new and exciting, and every day that I feel good, especially, and, I'm getting older, so I still, my back hurts every now and then and this and that, but, just normal things are really amazing. It also helps me to talk to others. I learned that. And so if there's somebody out there who thinks I don't want to talk to somebody, I'm going to tell you it does help. It's helped me a lot. So I'm going to suggest, if you get the opportunity, to talk to somebody, if you don't know who to talk to, my contact information will be around this podcast, and you'll know how to get a hold of me, and I'll make a referral. Exercising is phenomenal. Every day they push, in the beginning they didn't push me very hard, but I'm at 24 out of 36 sessions. They're pushing me pretty hard at this point, and they're like, are you okay with that? And I'm like, bring it on.
Are you working as hard out as you did a few years ago when you took me over to Get Fit and did your little program?
I'm not using that heavy of weights and stuff at this point. But as far as the physicalness of
you feel
how
like
I
you're
feel,
back, you feel like you're close to where you were then those days?
No, I'm 90%.
Oh.
Yeah. That's the other thing the doctors told me is it would be a year or two before I'm 100%. And that's if I work at it. If you don't work at it, you'll never get back. Yeah. And then, so I want to get strong. Two reasons to get strong. One is I feel better. The other is I also know if I get sick again, it's going to be really important that I'm strong. I live every day a little differently. I also learned that you don't need blinds to block the light out. And be careful with hand sanitizer.
Great.
The other thing I really learned, and the last thing I'm going to leave people with, well, the second to last thing I'm going to leave people with, is be your own health advocate. One of the biggest and best things we did was have that care conference and draw all those people together and make sure they're talking to each other. It seems like literally I was out of the hospital 10 days, something like that later. that we finally got to the point of, and so don't be afraid to push a little bit. Yeah, my doctor fired me, but that worked
that
out
actually
great.
Worked, right, right.
That worked out great. I don't have any ill feelings towards him, but I didn't like his bedside manner. I don't think it'd have been the same experience through the chemotherapy that I've had this way. And I'm really thrilled, but be your own advocate. When they're sticking stuff in both arms, tell them no. I mean, you know your body. And again, when you know you're sick, I don't know if I said this at the beginning or not, but I told George Ann when they were telling me,
right,
I wasn't, they thought it was the, I said, no,
something's wrong.
It's not something good. I said, it's something bad. I don't know what it is, but it's not good.
Right.
I knew something was going on. So listen to your body and be good about that. I wrote a little thing here it's not much, but I'm going to say, you never know what tomorrow is going to bring. And I found out really clearly what tomorrow could bring. I had these thoughts that I was at the pinnacle of life and, you know, everything was going to be roses and champagne from there out. And it wasn't. 2023 was a forgettable year, not an unforgettable year, although I'll never forget 2023. I can't wait for it to be over though. And the last thing is, no more salmon on New Year's.
So do we plan a New Year's on the 2024, a big party, celebrate the start of a good new year?
Yeah, we are. Although the person I talk to on a weekly basis said, don't be surprised if that's not a difficult day. Because you're going to have
I
all
suspect
this stuff
I know who that was.
Going on in your head. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I don't have a fabulous prognosis. Again, everybody kind of agrees with that thing that the doctor said.
But your best doctor doesn't agree with that prognosis.
No, she doesn't, and I love her for
that's
it.
That's exactly right. Then that's the one I'm going with.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. But I don't have a great prognosis, but I'm okay with that.
But you don't have, well, that's something we should probably talk about at some point.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. But the other thing is, in this day and age, in some ways, you're right on the cusp of all kinds of new technologies. I mean, literally weekly, they're talking new technologies. And you've got a doctor who's understanding that and up to speed with that. And that's the
And I have a good friend whose son is in the drug business, and he's telling me about these new drugs that are in the pipeline. And
there you go.
We're definitely, you know, I'm prepared to fight.
Well, I mean, you got to hang around.
I have to.
You got to hang around at least 10 years because we plan on having 10 years of this podcast. So, so yeah. Well, it was good talking with you, and I know you've got plans for our next couple of episodes with some interesting people to keep the discussions going. And
And we'll try to get some cancer patients too.
Yeah.
At some point, but for now, we're going to have a couple of health professionals, I think, on the next
perfect
episode or two.
Perfect. All right. Thanks, Dan. And we look forward to the next episode.
All right. Thanks.
This podcast is a production of Bread on the Water Media and Radio for the People.com.